Welcome, everyone, to Coffee with the College, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Healthcare Executives Wisconsin chapter. Why coffee, you ask? Our goal is that listeners find this podcast as relaxing as coffee with friends and just as comfortable as you hear our guests and observers banter about questions that are on all of our minds. If you've listened to our podcast before, you're familiar with our format. I'm your host, Janet Schultz. I'm Chief Communications Officer at a human services company called MyPath. Our observers are Brian Mahulski, Health System Specialist at Zablocki VA Medical Center in Milwaukee, and Abraham Dulhoff, Manager of Virtual Care and Patient Access to Care at Mercy Health. Today, we're continuing to explore the topic of resiliency. Our guest is Dr. Ian Martin, Chair of Emergency Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We've had the wonderful opportunity to chat with Dr. Martin previously, and he shared many perspectives on the role of leadership in team support and resilience. Welcome, Dr. Martin, Abraham, Brian.
How you doing, Janet? Great to be here.
Good, good. Glad you're here with us as well. Thank you for taking time from what we know is a very busy schedule, Dr. Martin.
Yeah, glad to have you, Dr. Martin.
So, you've heard our topic. It's resiliency. So let's start with a basic question. How do you personally define resiliency?
That's a great question, Janet. I sort of describe in very crude terms, resiliency as sort of one's innate ability to cope with tough times. I think that in healthcare, we often use terms like wellness, and I think there are things that we can do, tactics that we can do to achieve wellness, but I think resiliency is quite different, and I think it's much more innate. I think it's something that you're sort of born with or is instilled in you, engendered in you in some way in your childhood, but ultimately I think it's one's ability to deal with really, really tough times.
It makes me think of the definition of health. Most of the time you hear the definition of health, the absence of illness.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we define resiliency in a similar manner. It's, resiliency is not giving up or something like that. It's the absence of something.
Perseverance. You could think about perseverance as sort of related concept.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, what allows some people to get knocked down and have the fortitude to get themselves up and keep moving forward, and then others who are really challenged in doing that.
Well, I heard a definition of resiliency earlier this week, and it kind of wove in the word of the year, and that is pivot. And I think the definition was it's the ability to pivot again to address new circumstances. And if that isn't what we're experiencing in 2020, I don't know what is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So this seems like a long time ago, Dr. Martin, but I'd appreciate it if you just kind of think back to March 12th, which we all think of as the day the world started to shut down. And we found it fascinating in these podcasts to just kind of compare notes and see what our guests' experiences were. So can you talk to us about what March brought to you?
Yeah. Back in March, I was still president of a national association, the Society for Academic Emergency Medicine, which is based out of Chicago. And so I was actually in Southern California on business related to that role. And I think it was a Saturday or so when I got word that we had our first confirmed COVID case at our main campus emergency department. We all sort of anticipated, given the trends in the state, that we would probably have our first case, you know, in the subsequent 2 weeks or so. But quite honestly, we were caught a little bit off guard when it happened. And ideally, I certainly, as a leader, had I known that this crisis were coming, I would have planned to be on campus. But unfortunately, I was away. And so really, it was very hard for me to balance the work that I was doing in Southern California, but also trying to be virtually available to my team here when they were, you know, working feverishly to figure out what to do and how to handle the situation.
Dr. Martin, you said as a leader, you would have liked to have been there for your staff and everything. What what does that mean to you? Like, what do you, being present and being there, how does that help your staff?
That's a good question. So, you know, I was on the phone probably every hour on the hour for the rest of the time. I was probably there for another 36 hours before I could get back. So it was Monday evening before I was able to get back to Milwaukee, and essentially came straight to campus and spent about the next 6 or 8 weeks every day on campus, sometimes working clinically, but mostly doing administrative work. And really, I say, What I really served to do, particularly in that first week, was number one, to coordinate. So my team was doing all this amazing stuff. I mean, they really were. They were figuring out what our clinical and operational response to an unprecedented challenge was going to be. But what they lacked was how to coordinate that. And the other thing is the communication, or as I like to say it now, the over-communication part was a critical part of what I added to the mix in the immediate weeks after this all started. And then really the third thing is, I call it the third C, and that's created presence. I can remember after I had, you know, been back now 4 or 5 days, and whether I was working clinically or not, I always made it my business to go through our main campus emergency department with my PPE on. And I was just saying, how are you? And I do remember one of our staff saying, well, I'm starting to feel better. I'm starting to feel like we have a plan. And so I think when there are crises like this and people are afraid and people are unsure, they are really looking for leadership more than ever. I think most times people don't think too much about who their leaders are, but certainly during times of crisis, they get to see what their leaders are made of, and they are really looking for guidance from them.
That's a really interesting that you share that kind of a story. I heard a statistic once that there are two relationships that have an overall impact over all others, on your health. And the first was your spouse or significant other. And the second was your boss. Oh. Interestingly. So if you don't have a good relationship with your boss, you are more likely to, you know, have adverse health outcomes. But as you're talking about it, it helps me to kind of put that in perspective, in that I think there's a psychology to it, just like there is for any kind of health self-care or health process. It seems like there's a huge emotional toll to all of this for you and your team. Can you talk about how you as a leader, or you saw within your team, were exercising maybe creatively or otherwise to keep empathy within the team, to make sure that you're all sensitive to each other's needs?
We probably never use that word as much as we have of late, empathy, right, with our leaders. And, you know, in healthcare, I think when you think about the therapeutic relationship, there's this balance you're always trying to achieve between being close enough to the patient that you can be empathetic, but not so close to the patient that every time something bad happens or you lose a patient, you become a basket case. And so there's probably like that just right balance.
Yeah.
That usual balance for most of us was completely, or has been, I would actually say it's largely still a little bit out of whack because of this virus and the nature of this virus and its contagiousness and what's required for us to wear. So we have literally we're reestablishing what the relationship, the physical relationship between our patients and physicians and non-physicians is. We have masks that don't show expressions, and we have gowns that make us look incredibly scary and impersonal. And folks have tried things like we have nice badges with enlarged pictures of ourselves, like looking normal, that people will affix to their PPE to show that, like, I'm actually a real person. Or I've seen folks do things like draw smiley faces on face mask to bring cheer to patients. So I think that's been extraordinarily challenging. One of the things that we did long before COVID hit was one of our faculty members developed the intentional pause. And basically it's a whenever we lose a patient, we, and any member of the healthcare team can initiate this. It's often the physician, but it could really be any member who, when we have laminated cards that have sort of a script, or you can speak off the script, that really sort of punctuates what just happened. We are always working in this crazy, chaotic environment, but we just lost a real person. It just takes a minute or so to acknowledge that we lost a person, and that this person is someone's mother, or someone's, you know, father, or someone's child. And it's been a huge success in terms of just slowing down, punctuating, and maintaining the empathy, but also reminding us of why we're really doing this as physicians and others.
That's really powerful. Another statistic, I'm not sure why these are the ones that are coming to my mind at this time, but was specifically around healthcare workers, that typical healthcare workers are 2.2% more likely to commit suicide.
Yes.
And so I think part of it is that we forget why we're here. My wife is a nurse, and I work with folks like you, and I see these tactics, for the lack of a better term, like what you're talking about, this intentional pause, as they have to be really thoughtful and intentional, to use your term, about reminding themselves daily, this is why I'm here. And COVID has been, I don't want to call it cathartic, but it's been a big reset, yeah. Seems like, for a lot of my colleagues and a lot of the clinicians who are practicing. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's great.
Can you talk a little bit about what the roller coaster has been like for your team, and what additional things you're doing to help them cope with it?
So when I think about what we've been going through, if you're to use the roller coaster analogy, I would say sort of March and April were sort of a combination of that. You know, when you're on a roller coaster and you're going up this really steep clink, 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 you know, so all this anticipation is building. And then you go over this very, very, very steep hill that passes quickly. I think we weathered that part, what I would call the acute crisis part of the pandemic. But we are now in the long, slow burn of the pandemic. And I think in many ways, this is actually much harder than the crisis part. Because I think, again, the crisis part tends to be more well-defined in terms of time period, shorter in terms of time period. And I think most of us back in March and April thought we would probably be in a very different place come October. And the fact that we're not, and people don't know when to expect. In fact, I've heard, for example, the New York Opera saying we're not going to open till at least 2022. That light that people could kind of see back then, if we worked really hard and we tackled this virus, by in summer's end, fall, we'll be sort of back to normal. Now that light is dim. And all these new routines we're all having to establish, it just gets hard. It's just sort of like we were in a sprint in the beginning, and now we're certainly in a marathon, and marathons are hard.
Yeah, I know in one of our facilities, the whole stressor of the school uncertainty has really been hitting. You know, it was one thing to kind of pinch hit in spring. It's another when the uncertainty of needing to teach kids at home goes on. And in one of our facilities, we even have team members that are pitching in. In the literal, it takes a village. They're pitching in on the virtual education of coworkers' kids, just so that we can help people maintain some balance and also, frankly, maintain staffing that people feel supported.
The association whose board I'm on, they had parents who were really trying to make it work of homeschool and coming into the office. And they, you know, the CEO was very creative, and essentially there were employees who couldn't do their usual IT work because of the shutdown, but who happened to be a former teacher. And so they married those needs together, actually created a bubble in the workplace where the kids could come. so the parents could continue to be productive for the organization, but could get formal structured teaching from an actual teacher. So it helped him have work as well. And you've seen a number of groups really be creative around those sort of solutions. I know when AHA for me as a leader, one of my assumptions that was definitely wrong, when we were coming up, this is probably in August or so, when there was all this anxiety about how school opening would happen, I sort of naturally assumed that many of my staff would prefer a hybrid situation where they could go and come into work sometimes and be at home doing homeschooling the other time. But I actually learned in talking to a few staff who have young kids at home, they actually found that more stressful than if the kids were all at home or all at school, because it meant that in any given work week, there were different flavors of the work day, depending upon, you know, was this a homeschool day or was this an actual work day? So that was certainly eye-opening for me as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Martin, we talked about like both phases, and with that of the unknown, now we're, so basically the first phase was a high intensity, unknown, changing minute by minute. And now we're in this long slog of who knows how long it'll be, but at least we know what we have kind of deal right now. But with that, in those two different phases, how do you, in the emergency room, it's physically tolling and you describe mentally tolling and emotionally. What are some self-care tips that, how do you stay energized in both types of phases? The long slog and the, oh my gosh, our ER physicians work 12 hours. So 12 hours of just going nuts and then you got to come back. How do you keep yourself healthy?
Well, I think for me, when we were in the first part of the pandemic, truly crisis management, and when we were on lockdown for about, I guess it was about 8 weeks or so, given the nature of the work that I do, I was out of the house every day to go to work. So one of the few folks, and I live in a high rise that was actually getting out and stuff. And my wife, who's a child analyst, a psychiatrist, you know, they had moved to a virtual platform. And it was very, it was really helpful for me to maintain my routine of getting up about the same time every morning, dressing about the same way I did, driving the same route to get to my office. So over those first, probably 8 weeks or so, my routine didn't change a whole lot. Now, the nature of the work that I was doing was very different. I was battling a pandemic and trying to lead an organization through that. But the mechanics of how I got to and from the work was really, I really managed to maintain, and that gave me a sense of keeping my wits about me. It stabilized me. It was a stabilizing force. I will remember in the early stages, and again when we're on lockdown, how much I enjoy my drives to and from work, which is sort of a weird thing. My drive is probably 15 minutes or so, but that was really the extent of my outings for about 2 months, just like many other, and maybe mine was actually more than many other folks who weren't essential employees and so did not have to get out the house. But I remember how much I enjoy the drive, just the fresh air, just to see something other than the inside of my office, the inside of a hospital, or inside of my own home. So I would say in the end, I think a really critical thing is to know your limits. I call it, when I'm getting a little stressed or burned out, I call it getting crispy. It's the edges are getting a little bit crispy, and I can see it in my energy level. I can see it in maybe not being as patient as I usually am at home or as patient as I usually am in the workplace. And I think it's important to, number one, recognize it. And number two, give yourself license to do whatever it is you need to do to get uncrispy. So if that's going for a run, if that's tennis, if it's, an overnight trip somewhere, you got to do that because we all have energy is renewable, certainly. But you got to know, you got to recognize, number one, that it's low. And then you got to know what it is that recharges you.
I agree with the routine thing. I personally am a type A type person with routine. And early on, I had one family member that was laid off and one that just went full virtual. And they were complaining and I was upset with them saying, I have to go into work. Why are you upset? You get to go do this. And I realized very quickly that I was fine with that because that was part of my routine. And they were literally now months later, we talk about that and they were losing self-worth. That would have never crossed my mind. And it was just interesting what goes on emotionally and in everybody's situation. And you can never know what somebody else is going through.
Absolutely. And the other thing you think about is now that people are opening up, more people are going back into the workplace, maybe not full time, but in a hybrid fashion, those folks, one thing I didn't really have to contend with was like undoing my new normal, at least in terms of work from home. So when things, and again, a big part of the time, I was the only person in the office, and rightfully so. But as things began to open up and more people came back to campus, I know it was a really big shock for many of them who had sort of grown accustomed to, working in the virtual environment from home.
We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors for making our time together today possible. Our premier sponsors are HGA Architects and Engineers and Hush Blackwell. Our preferred sponsors are Epstein Yuen Architects, Hall, Render, Killian, Heath & Lyman, Findorf, Nutanix, and Quarles & Brady.
Dr. Martin, sounds like for you, having that routine and Brian having that routine is really valuable. What other advice would you give? I'm just thinking in my life, I deal with a lot of other, in my world of virtual care, I'm not technical, I'm not operational, I'm not, I'm a lot of different things, but I don't strictly have control over, the nurse in the emergency department, for example. I can't do anything in a leadership role to help her. I have to work with, maybe somebody else if I see something. But what advice would you give to other leaders that have staff or colleagues that may have not been able to find that thing that kind of keeps them sane?
That's a good question. I think self-care is important in a way in which it may never have been before, given these trying times. And again, I think some people are much more in tune to their own physiology and psychology of what it is that they need. Where is my energy level? Is it low? Is it high? Is it, and if it's low, how do I rejuvenate it? But there's some others who probably maybe are less in tune with that, or maybe less able to they may recognize it, but maybe are not in a financial situation where they can say, I need to take a day off. And so I think that's where it's really important for us as a team to sort of be watching over each other. And again, if you ascribe to the notion, as I do, that resilience is mostly an innate thing, one of the advantages of sort of working as a team is that team of, let's say, five individuals is going to bring different amounts of resiliency to the work and to each other. And so when there are trying times, your more resilient colleagues may be able to take on a little more of the burden than maybe some of your less resilient. But as a unit, you're a resilient bunch.
Do you have any advice that you'd give for maybe looking at others to see if they're getting a little crispy? Are there two or three real cardinal signals that this person's getting done and I need to intervene?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the ways that, at least in my work, that you can most tell it is you probably have a pretty good sense for what a normal set of interactions is with your, mm-hmm. your colleagues in sort of non-stressful times. And certainly when you see someone who's usually pretty even keel all of a sudden get upset, let's say, about something that seems small, there's usually a much deeper reason why that is going on. And I think it can be really helpful to, you know, in a private and respectful way and say, hey, is everything okay? I think that can be a great tactic. So most of the times when I've noticed someone getting crispy, it's they're just not relating to others the way in which I'm used to them relating.
Yeah. That makes me think of one of the things that we talk about maintaining health is, you know, a good indicator of health is an outstanding or a different heart rate than normal. One of the things that is a good indicator for primary care providers is to have a historic relationship with this patient.
Absolutely.
Because I might come in and my regular heart rate,
yeah,
my blood pressure may be one thing normal, and compared to a peer, yeah, it's extremely high or extremely low. And if I walked into, I don't know, anybody's office, emergency department or something, they could just say, okay, this guy's blood pressure is out of the roof. But my primary care provider has historical reference to indicate, okay, this is actually normal. So it just makes me think about that because we're working on that currently in our systems, how we get good blood pressures to make sure that they're accurate. Creating a baseline,
yeah,
and comparing current actions to historical, and that's a good indicator.
And I think the comment goes two ways. So when you detect those changes, and sometimes they're subtle, it's both an opportunity to say, hey, is everything okay? And maybe yeah, help, depending upon how the person responds, help that person with resources. But it's also an opportunity, and I found myself doing this, and this is like, I need to cut this person some slack. Like, right?
Right.
Really a stressful time for the people that we're leading right now. And so I'm, when I have noticed that, I have to remind myself to be even more patient than normal,
yeah,
because these are not to overuse the word, but unprecedented times that most folks, all of us, are experiencing.
Yeah. It's almost like you're taking, to use your term earlier, you're taking an intentional pause to remind yourself, yes, that this person is a human too.
Yeah.
That they blew up at you. Yeah. They blew up at you. But if you just take a moment and realize, okay, this person's reacting to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you're humanizing patients and you're humanizing people and separating actions from the person. That's good.
Dr. Martin, we pre-recording, we were talking about what's going on currently. And as of the time of this recording, Wisconsin is not doing well as a whole with the number of cases. And I think this morning or yesterday, we set a record for 700 plus hospitalizations. Is there anything you're doing as a leader to say, remember, we shouldn't do this, or let's do this? And as we talked, Milwaukee County is not doing terribly. They're actually, Milwaukee County is doing it all right, but that could spread quickly to Milwaukee County from the outlying counties.
Yeah.
Are you guys prepping in any sort of way, or what are some lessons learned that you guys will be ready for that you weren't?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, I get many family and friends reach out to me and say, hey, I hear things are getting pretty rough in Wisconsin. And truth be told, you know, in Milwaukee County, we're actually doing reasonably well for now. And much of the surge that we've seen is in the northern part of the state and on the western part of the state. But as you point out, it could easily change on a dime, as we've seen in any number of other instances related to this pandemic. You know, one of the things when we were in crisis management, we had something we call the Enterprise Incident Command Structure. So it's sort of adopted from FEMA, and it really allowed us to construct a command structure that brought key leader stakeholders across our organizations together to react and plan in a nimble and decisive way. And then once we were in the recovery mode, it actually transitioned into a recovery command structure. But one of the things in the recovery command is, as we approached normal operations, which was at the end of August, beginning of September, was to make sure that we were prepared to do two things at once, which was maintain normal operations and also see a lot of COVID-19 patients. You know, I think our strategy, like the strategy of most other health systems and hospitals when this all happened, was stop normal operations, only focus on COVID. There were some unintended consequences of doing that and important lessons learned out of that. So we've really, as we were coming out of the summer, focused to make sure that we had things in place so that we could take care of a surge of COVID-19 patients, but also maintain normal operations, normal care for patients with other needs beyond COVID-19.
So Dr. Martin, what's making you hopeful in the midst of everything?
Well, I'm just an inherently hopeful person. I think if you talk to most people who know me, I can make lemonade out of just about any lemon. So I think my natural disposition is of hope. I think things, you know, this last 7 months, which has sort of been three crises, right? So it starts with the pandemic, which then results in an economic crisis. And then we had all the racial social injustice crisis that we have as a country have been battling, like three, any one of which would keep any leaders busy, but trying to do all three at once. I think it's been an opportunity to see some of the real challenges we have as a country, but also some of the best of us. And I think we've learned some really important lessons. I think that COVID in particular has really, as organizations recovered, most are using it as an opportunity to really reimagine themselves as organizations. We've proven through COVID in the last 7 months that we can be very different kinds of organizations. We can provide care in very different and more meaningful ways to patients. Virtual visits as yet an example. You know, we had talked for many years across various regions of the country about more patient-centered virtual visits, and there were a whole number, host of reasons why that hadn't really happened yet. But COVID really got us over that hump. And that's just really one example. So in the end, again, I think I'm just a pretty positive person who can generally find the silver lining in almost any situation. But I'm really excited by this reimagined future that we have, you know, before us in healthcare. I think we'll look back, you know, when I'm retiring from medicine and, you know, really old and gray, I think we'll think about 2020 as that year of disruptive change in a number of industries, but particularly healthcare.
So as you fast forward into that future, and as those gray hairs are coming in and you're in front of a class of medical students 10 years from now, what would you tell them we learned from this time?
Well, I can speak for what I learned as a leader.
Okay.
So I think the single most important thing I've learned is that, and maybe I should have known this, or maybe I did know this, but this was really on full display, and that is that, you know, people are our most important asset. People are our most important asset. And with that, at least in the line of work that I do and in the specialty emergency medicine, I think the sense of community, and I think the need for cohesion is really core. And I think that's part of why the physical distance that COVID has induced has been so hard on folks, because I think particularly in emergency medicine, when we're used to working as teams and we're used to working closely together, and I mean both figuratively and literally, I think having this physical separation has been incredibly, incredibly difficult. I learned also fully recognizing that you know, people are our most valuable asset, that teamwork really has been the fuel, at least for our department's success. And that's been on full display as we battle this pandemic and look to recover. I alluded to this next point earlier, and that was that there's almost nothing more important than these last two points I'll make, and that is over communication. And lastly, that, you know, as a leader, you need to be present. And that can be a stabilizing force in and of itself to the folks that you're leading. So those are some of the things I would share with some future medical students.
And isn't it fascinating that what you just shared is about the human side of the equation, not the clinical side of the equation?
We'll figure out
the clinical, right? But we've got to attend to the human because that's what's there always, right?
Well, it is. And I think as a leader, you quickly realize the really absolutely most rewarding part of being a leader are the people. And you also realize that the most difficult and hard things about being a leader are leading the people, right? And there's a double-edged sword, and it's a great privilege, but I guess that's why I ended up in that reflection, focusing on the people part.
Mm-hmm. Our topic has been resiliency. And at the outset, you talked about feeling that there's an innateness to resiliency. Yeah. Perhaps it's not so much a learned thing. But when I think about what we've been through over these last months, what's your opinion, Dr. Martin? I know when I went back to school for my MBA, I felt like a rubber band that had stretched, and I realized a new amount of capacity that I had to work full time and still pursue that education. Have we gained some capacity when we emerge from this? Do you think we'll emerge more resilient collectively?
I do. I really do. I mean, this is sort of been an emotional stress test for the country, for our communities. I'm confident, again, this is probably my rosy nature. I'm confident we're going to come out of all of this for the better. Not without our fits and starts, and we're clearly seeing that, but I do feel like the trend line is going to be positive, and we will be more resilient as a country. I mean, if you just think about, imagine a year or 2 years from now, probably more like 2 years to be quite honest, when we're, you know, reclaiming much of what we knew to be normal, we'll be quite proud of ourselves, I think, if we will have, you know, weathered that storm. I was talking to a colleague who's also a physician. She says, you know, you read about the Spanish flu, 1918, and things like the Great Depression, and you're always talking about them from the perspective of that's ancient history and it could never be, you know, those things would never happen again. But the reality is the coronavirus of 2020 will probably be much talked about in 100 years, much like we talk about the Spanish flu of 1918. So we are actually living through one of those great, and I don't mean good, great, but great moments in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you talk about that sense of 2 years from now, I also can't help but think, hopefully, the appreciation we'll have for some of the simple things in life that we're realizing aren't quite so simple.
Yeah, you know, that is great. The hardest, you know, I think one of the hardest, to me, one of the saddest things about, two saddest things about COVID, of course, all the folks we've lost, that goes without saying, but going back to the empathy part of the discussion, where we've watched patients who've had to die alone, we've had to fill a role in their lives in which we don't normally have to fill because families can be a part of that dying process with them. And I think that's incredibly sad. And I think maybe the saddest thing for me in thinking about all the patients who essentially had to die alone. Mm-hmm. And the other really sad part is all the missed milestones. So probably every one of us in this conversation has had some major milestone missed or delay because of this, some of which can never be recaptured. And I think that's just incredibly sad to watch people miss those important developmental milestones, particularly young people.
Mm-hmm. We're transitioning our system from what we were doing for virtual care for the system before to something new. And there's a lot of intensity. Yeah. And you brought up just being present. I can't do a whole lot. Like, I go to the clinics when they launch, or we just launched a new telestroke program. I was at a partner hospital. Like, I couldn't help, but I was emotional support. And so when things went downhill, they looked at me and I couldn't say, I don't know what to do. That wasn't an option for me. But I was physically present. I was there. And so you brought that up earlier, and that was just so, that just resounded so on a personal level and a professional level for me, that I was just, it was really like a qualifying moment that I'd made the right choice by traveling out there.
That concludes our podcast conversation for today. And we have just so appreciated your time, Dr. Martin, and your insights from the experiences you've had over these last months. And Brian and Abraham, as always, I so appreciate you being such wise observers to our discussion. So I want to recap a few of the things that Dr. Martin talked about. First, in terms of how we can, as leaders, bring resiliency to our team through our efforts to coordinate, over-communicate, and create a presence. And that as leaders, we should never underestimate the importance of those four C's, because it is the role of leadership to create reassurance. And that reassurance then creates the resilience of the team. That's the daisy chain that we're responsible as leaders to create, especially in the swirl of so many things being unpredictable. We also talked a bit about the role of empathy, and that reminding ourselves that having empathy for each other and empathy for those we care for is what gives us that purpose-driven life. And it's what gets us out of bed, even when there's a pandemic and the risks of that pandemic swirling around us. And then Dr. Martin also reminded us that we all need to know our limits. We don't come to work every day with superhero capes on, and we too as leaders can get crispy. And so let's continue to build our own resilience and our own self-awareness so that we can be there for those that are counting on us. And I loved Dr. Martin's statement, energy is renewable. And that's almost like a mantra we should repeat to ourselves. Energy is renewable, but only each of us knows what will do that renewal for us. And we need to listen to that inner voice when it's talking to us. And finally, feels very fitting that in a podcast series about resiliency, we should remind ourselves that people are our most important asset. So let's take care of each other out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.